Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 76. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Yo.
And it's summertime, so this month we're going to camp with a pair of summer camp films. But before that, we've watched some stuff. I've watched a little bit. I'm not sure how much Jeff has watched over the course of the month, but we talk about that first before we jump into our double features. Jeff, what have you been watching?
Not too much. I did see a couple of newish movies, but since you had already seen them and talked about them on here, I'll be brief with them.
Okay.
Two movies that I think had very hard tasks in front of them. One was the new Faces of Death.
Yep.
Which, I recall you saying like you thought it was decent.
It was fine.
I'll agree with, if you were tasked with making a new Faces of Death, the like premise here is probably like one of the only ways to do it, which is just that somebody's copying stuff from those old movies.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where my praise of it ends.
Fair enough.
I thought it was really cool. Like, just nothing about it. I thought a lot of the acting was bad. The main character, she was from Euphoria, and she was good on Euphoria. I don't know that she could carry a movie. The villain, I never really understood what his deal was, like why he wanted to copy these things.
Yeah, I don't think they dig into his motivation very well.
Yeah, and like the, I don't know, none of the kills or anything, or I don't know, it's just, there's just nothing about it I thought was good at all. Like, I thought it was actually pretty terrible. And kind of surprised me, because when I looked up the director, he had done two movies that I had really liked. He did another internet-based horror movie called Cam, which I thought was really good and smart. And then he also did, his last movie was How to Blow Up a Pipeline, which was like a political thriller. Like, both really good. I'm like shocked that he turned out something I thought was this bad, but that's that. It's on Shudder now, so if you have Shudder, you can watch it. But I just don't think it was worth it.
Fair enough.
The other movie that you had previously seen, and I saw because it just came to Amazon Prime, is Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
I really loved it. I thought it was a blast. It's like, I guess I should set up that, like, when I was a little kid, like, that was the thing, was He-Man. Like, I grew up right in the height of that.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, by the time I was probably old enough to understand it all, like, it was ending. But, you know, it was still kind of popular throughout, it aired throughout the 80s.
Yeah.
And so I was a really, like, big fan of He-Man and all that, and I still have a box of those toys. But, you know, like, I haven't thought about this property in many, many years. You know, I went back to watch some of those old cartoons, and I was like, geez, this is rough. But yeah, I really liked the movie. Like, it kind of, like, rekindled that love I had for it when I was really little. Like, for one, the look of it is awesome. Like, just the colors. Like, there's a part where they get into this forest and it's like all magenta looking and shit. It's just like awesome looking. Like, and the other thing I thought was like really good about it is like how silly it is. Like, yeah. You know, it knows that trying to do a He-Man movie is quite the challenge, and it's just like pokes fun at the idea of doing that. And it had a lot of like sex humor in it that, you know, for instance, he names the one guy Fisto, and he's like, because he's
yeah,
stuff like that. But even like, but there was a lot of sex. Like, there's one part where Skeletor is like talking shit to He-Man, and he's like, "You think you're so powerful with that big sword, you know, that big glorious sword dangling between your legs?" And I was just like, "Jeez, like, we get it." And I like that. I liked all that. It's like, I like the look of it. I like the humor. I was also worried that it would be like a long intro where you're on Earth, but it's not really the case. It's like it starts in Eternia. He goes to Earth for like 10 minutes and then he's back in Eternia. Like it's a fairly short runtime on Earth. It was good. Some cool cameos. I don't know if you stuck through the credits, Chris, but
I did. Yeah.
There's a cameo by the wizard who I think his name was Orko or something.
Yep.
He would show up at the end of the episodes and tell you the lesson of the episode. He does that here. I guess that's a spoiler, I guess, but whatever. If you're into He-Man, you'll be happy to know that's in there. There's another credit scene where it seemed to be like they were setting up She-Ra, which that will never happen, but they had high hopes.
No. Yeah, that's unfortunate because it's very fun.
I unashamedly think it's a good movie that is worth checking out if you're into like if you're into superhero movies and Marvel and shit. Like, it feels a lot like one of those, but I thought the humor was better. It reminded me a lot of like that new Dungeons and Dragons that was really funny, but also had like really good reverence for the property.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, yeah. Big recommend. Too bad, bombed.
similar vibe to Dungeons and Dragons, and unfortunately, ultimately the same fate, I think.
Sucks. I wonder how it's doing at Prime now that's on Prime, and whether the powers that be will deem that like again, odds of them doing anything worth this are like pretty much zero, but maybe they got Bezos has money.
Yeah, and maybe if it does catch an audience on Prime, like they're like, hey, we should invest in a sequel to this, and that would be awesome.
It really made me want a Masters of the Universe RPG, because I think that would be just so cool. One, visually, I think that's what like made me think of it, but also like, hey, what if you had a party with all these like crazy insane characters, and you're going through this world that's like a mix of fantasy and sci-fi? Like, it'd be so awesome.
Yeah.
I looked up, I think I said to you, I want a fucking Masters of the Universe game now. And I guess there was one that was supposed to coincide with the movie that's still not out, but it's like a Golden Axe ripoff. Not what I was thinking, what I envisioned. Like, yeah. Again,
triple A.
I want From Software's. Square Enix's Master of the Universe, whatever, something like that. I don't know.
That would be funny.
So those are the movies I saw. I guess I saw one other. I guess it's not a movie. It's a documentary series on HBO called The Dark Wizard. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, in my mind, it's like a documentary film. It's just a 4-hour documentary film. And this is about Dean Potter, who was very famous in the rock climbing community and do insane stunts that, you know, started with climbs, and he would do, you know, free solo climbs, no rope. He started doing like these high wire things where he would walk between mountains on a wire with no tether. So like if he fell, he had to catch himself or he would die. And kept doing increasingly insane things, even as he began to age. And I thought this was a really beautiful film and an easy recommend. You'll see footage in it that's just like unbelievable and just had like got physical reactions. Like, first of all, you're just like, I can't believe that anyone would do this. But not just like that you're going to see like him doing it, but the footage of it is so incredible. And a lot of it's like footage from like the late 90s or early 2000s, and it still looks really good. And I'm also just like, how are they getting these shots? Because, you know, there weren't drones and stuff back then. And what it was is, like, Hammer Guy was just safely rock climbing with a rope and capturing footage, but man, the footage is really spectacular.
That's cool.
And yeah, again, the things you'll see him do, you're just like, I cannot believe. Like, he went to China at some point, like, I think 2011, and he was doing this, you know, walking a wire between two mountains. And the day before he's going to do it, he's practicing it, and he's using a tether while he's practicing, and he could not get it. He could not do it. And he still went ahead and did it the next day after that with no tether, and you're just like, dude. So, like, just watching that, you're just like, it was, like, intense watching it. I was like, holy shit. And you could tell it was intense for him. Like, when he makes it, he, like, falls down and he's, like, crying. He's just like, because you could tell he was, like, scared he was going to die. Yeah, if you're, like, afraid of heights or have any sort of interest in these type of rock climbing documentaries, it's really, really good. I don't know if you ever saw that movie Fall from a few years ago, where, like, these two girls climb a tower.
Yeah, it's, like, on my watch list. I've been wanting to watch that one.
I was going to say, if that was effective for you, watch this, because this will have you shitting your pants, dude. Because not only is this, like, more intense than that movie, probably, but it's all real, you know? And you're just like, geez. So yeah, that's the Dark Wizard on HBO. Big recommend for me. One of the best things I've seen this year. And although I've seen some other things, did I mention Cape Fear on here?
No.
I'll be very brief with that too. It's fucking nuts. It's an insane show. Some would argue bad, but it's, like, super entertaining. I wouldn't go as, like, a lot of people are watching this on film Twitter and having a ball watching it, like, making fun of it. And, like, I can see where they're coming from. There's things where you're just like, dude. But, it is so wild, but then that makes it entertaining, right? And, Javier Bardem is in the Max Cady role as the bad guy who gets out of prison and tortures this family. And it's the scariest I've ever seen Javier Bardem. I thought he was scarier here than he was in even No Country for Old Men. Just really, like, one of my favorite Bardem performances. And that's wrapping up, I think, tonight. I think there's, like, one or two episodes left. Again, silly and possibly stupid and bad, but also wild and entertaining with a really great performance by him. I'll leave it at that, man.
Looks like the last episode is tomorrow night.
Okay. Yeah, it's a recommend. Like, again, there's things I would recommend above it.
It's like trash TV, but fun.
Yeah, it's fun. I guess in the same vein, and then I will leave it at that, is I did mention Star City on here, I'm pretty sure. That wrapped up. That was incredible, dude. Oh, my God. The end, like, the finale, the last three it's an 8-episode series. The last three episodes are just incredible, and the finale especially, it was just like, holy shit, edge of your seat, like, craziness and awesomeness, and I was so skeptical of that show going in, because I'm like, why do I need to see the Russian side of, like, the story I've already seen, and it's its own thing. I think I mentioned when I mentioned it, like, last month, it's, like, way more kind of Andor-ish, where it's, like, these astronauts are, like, living under an oppressive government that's spying on them and shit, and it turns into, like, a spy thriller, but also mixes the sci-fi, well, not, it's not really sci-fi, it, you know, it's the space shit.
Yeah.
With it in a really, really awesome way. I can't recommend it enough, man. Like, and honestly, like, the finales for, like, For All Mankind are always good, but I think this might be better than any season of For All Mankind, which I would have never expected to see going in. It ditches all the hope, really, that For All Mankind has in it, though. But that's it. Yeah, that's kind of what I've been watching. What about you?
Nice. Well, I went to the theater a couple times, and one of those times I saw the big movie of I guess of the year, maybe. Mm-hmm. I went and saw The Odyssey by Christopher Nolan's latest film, starring every actor you've ever imagined. It was funny. I didn't know some of these people were in it, and like, oh, that person is also in this. I think it's a phenomenal film. It's 3 hours long. I did not feel like it was a 3 hour movie. Just kind of goes by. I think it's paced perfectly. It's shot wonderfully. It's loud when it needs to be loud. I think it might be his best mixed movie too, though, because one of the complaints you hear about Nolan films in general is that, oh, the dialogue is just, it's hard to hear. Yet it was like super crisp throughout. So you hear all of the dialogue between the characters, and then this like really awesome score that's going on. The imagery is fantastic. It dabbles in horror at points. There is a Cyclops scene where Odysseus and his crew that are going home, his soldiers, they get trapped in this cave with this Cyclops that is just like gathering them up one at a time and like just biting their heads off like snacks.
Nice.
There is another scene later in the film where I believe the character's name is Circe. Cerise. She is a witch that lives like on the top of this like cliff, and the soldiers go up there and she turns them all into pigs, and you see her doing it, and so like their flesh is melting and she's reforming their bodies into a like these swine. It's nasty. Like, it's just really, really well done. Yeah, I really liked it. Really liked all the characters. I thought Tom Holland was fantastic in it. He plays Odysseus's son. And Matt Damon is really, really good in it as well. You know, he kind of has to be. He is the main go here. It is his story as he's on this long journey. I didn't find any of like, I mean, if you've been on the internet since, well, before The Odyssey even came out, if you've been on the internet and you've seen any discourse around The Odyssey, they have talked about Elliot Page being in it. They've talked about Lupita Nyong'o being in it. Other actors and actresses, like, just, it's not authentic. It's that whole like racist bullshit and transphobic bullshit
for people who don't actually go see movies, but like to be part of the conversation. Yeah,
and like one those characters, like Elliot Page, is in the movie for maybe 4 minutes. and I mean, he's supposed to look youngish because he's playing a young soldier that is like drafted into Odysseus's army at like 9 or 10 years old. And so they're away in Troy for 10 years. So he's supposed to be like 20 or something. And Elliot Page has a young looking kind of look to him, even though he's probably approaching 40 at this point. Anyway, it works. He plays Sinon, who, he's just a soldier that's there and has a minor role in all of this. He does really good. Helena Troy, played by Lupita, is like, she's a beautiful woman, and that's all that kind of Helen needs here. Also, only in the movie for like 3-4 minutes. Like,
well, so there were some right-wing people that saw the movie and ended up liking it. Did you see what they were saying about this then?
No.
They're like, oh, this is like this isn't actually woke. What it is he just put like enough of these people in the movie for like just long enough so he could meet these quotas so that he could be eligible for the Oscars.
Jesus, and they're so fucking dumb.
And while I did not know this, while it is true that the Oscars have standards for like diversity on productions,
right. Yeah,
I did not know that. It is like you could still be eligible for Oscars with like all white movies. It's just like the crew cannot be like all. You know what I mean? Like it's not all just the actors you see on screen. The standards they have. It's just that like your production has to have diversity standards.
Right. That makes sense.
So, yeah. Yeah. And so like what they're saying is not even based in reality anyways, because that's not true that you would have to put like X, Y, and Z genders and races into a movie to be eligible for Oscars. That's just not true at all. But it's their way of like skirting around the fact that they liked the movie.
Yeah. It's like, oh, he did it. He's really one of us, but he did it.
Yeah.
Like, get the fuck out of here. I mean, I don't know if I'm fully on board with the people that are like, Nolan wrote this as a modern day commentary on like where we're headed as a society of humans, and that like I'm not sure that that's exactly what he did here. I think he took a classical piece of literature and adapted it. And like, if you want to draw those conclusions towards it, fine. I think he set out and did exactly what he wanted to do with it though. And I think it's a great, great movie. It's probably up there in like my top three or four Nolan films. So
I can't trust you, man. You like every Nolan.
I think there's very few Nolan films that I don't like, that I'm not like, yeah, that was fucking phenomenal. Like, I get that. Like, I fully agree. Like, don't like
I knew going in you were gonna love it. Like, there was zero chance. Like,
yeah.
And see, like, I'm more. I think he's a really good director, obviously. But there's just like there's some movies of his I like, and some movies of his I don't like as much. He's not like Tarantino for me, where like you can know going in, I'm probably gonna like a Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
But I have not seen it yet. I will see it. I just don't really want, like, for the same reason as Oppenheimer, like, I didn't want to see it. Yeah, I don't really like movies that long in the theater. I guess one other thing before we move on to what else you've been watching is,
yeah,
one thing about Nolan, you mentioned this, is like they always are like, people are like, you know, the score blares so loud that you can't understand what people are saying. One reason I like it at home, so I can put the subtitles on. And I saw people saying that about this movie, and I listened to the score, and the score is not, like I'm watching it completely out of context, and, you know, I'm just listening to it on Apple Music. It's not, like, super bombastic and in-your-face, at least.
No, so it's like, not like that. So,
kind of like, does he just crank up the volume more, or, I mean, you're saying it wasn't that bad here.
I could, like, I mean, there are definitely films of his, like, Tenet has a horrible mix, like, where just, like, the sound effects and score overpower everything. I didn't feel that here at all. I thought that it was all mixed very well. It was loud, sound effect-wise and score-wise, when it needed to be. I didn't feel that it was, like, overpowering any of the dialogue. Generally, when they're speaking, like, it's like a lot of the dialogue takes place in like the court in Odysseus's court in his castle, where his wife and kid are like they're entertaining the suitors for to marry his wife, and like that is just, it's just loud in the sense that there's a lot of people in there and they're talking, but you can hear like the actual conversations you need to hear. It's never overpowering. So I didn't feel like it was crazy. I think the score is nice.
That's the other thing about like whether it's like edited together,
yeah,
how people say or how you say. I'm just like, you think of some of the scores to his movies, like The Dark Knight, that is very bombastic and very in your face. And I would say it's a feature of that movie. It makes it a stronger movie.
But listen to this. Way more subtle.
Yeah, listen to this score. It's more like eerie. Like it was, it's, it didn't seem bombastic to me or anything.
There's kind of like a mystical quality to
like
some
chanting
of
and stuff. Like,
yep. And like, look, I'm not saying it's not loud. Like it gets loud when it needs to, like the invasion of Troy, when they kind of sneak in with the horse, that's all like it. Once the battle starts there, it is super loud. There is a couple scenes on when they're in a boat, and they're like battling waves and like the waves are crashing over, or when the Cyclops is roaring. You've probably seen in the trailers, they fight these giant creatures that are in like armor, and they're just like picking up Greek soldiers and tossing them through trees, and like that's all effectively loud. But yeah, I don't think the soundtrack is like overpowering at all. So if you like sword and sandal movies, I think it's a really good one of those. Like it's a really good movie. I could see why if you're like, I don't want to sit in a theater for 3 hours. It's a long time. Like it is. It's a long time.
I think I would prefer it at home. Although the funny thing is, when I finally watched Oppenheimer, I was like, man, you should have went to go see that. I'll probably do the same thing here.
I'm like, shit, that would have looked awesome. And like, that's the thing, right? Like I will watch it at home, but his movies, I feel, are like, they are filmed specifically for like the biggest screen possible. And that's why I like to try and get out there in like the first week or so.
Did you just see it in a regular format, or?
So I saw it in Dolby. I didn't see it in the IMAX. We have an IMAX and a Dolby screen at our theater, but the IMAX was either like sit in the front row of the IMAX theater, which I don't.
It's impossible. Or
like sit next to somebody, and I was like, you know what, Dolby's good. Like it's a very big screen too. It's loud in there. And there were less people. So I just went across the hall to the other screen. The other thing I saw in theaters was Evil Dead Burn. I think it's the sixth Evil Dead movie. It's an Evil Dead movie. There's deadites. And it's gory. It's definitely more akin to the more recent Evil Dead movies. What was it? Evil Dead Rise a few years ago. And then I think it was just called Evil Dead from like probably 5-10 years ago. It is like that, where it is kind of this gritty, gory. It's not necessarily, it's not Ash. It's not that Evil Dead, which is still there. It's still in the DNA. There are some of those Sam Raimi shots where, you know, some of like the fast kinetic camera cuts that are zooming you in like very quickly to an area. But this is not that it's not Sam Raimi's Evil Dead. It's more modern day Evil Dead. I saw somebody compare this to like the French New Extreme Horror.
It's a French
director. And so like I was like, yeah, that checks out. It has some of that, like the, also, there's a meanness to this film that I don't think is in the other two, like recent Evil Deads. Like, it's a very mean movie. And aside from there are two, so it's about a family that has a linkage to the Necronomicon, and I guess there's like some sort of special knife or something. I don't know. It seems like new Evil Dead lore to me. there's a special knife that the Deadites are trying to get, because if they can do that, they can they can't be defeated or something. I don't know. It's very stupid. Who gives a fuck? Because it's just really them torturing this family. And as they do so, basically the Deadites transfer. It's almost like a zombie-ish type draw. Like if you get some blood or liquid or like bodily fluid in you, the Deadites kind of take over you as well. And it's like slowly this whole family is being taken over by the Deadites, and they're all mean and nasty. There are some brutal kills. There's some very uncomfortable shots as well, where, you know, there's one point where the dad character he's been taken over by a Deadite, but he is just shooting himself over and over again in the head, to the point where later in the film, because he's not dead, like, well, he is dead, but he's possessed by the Deadites, his whole head is like missing pieces of skull, and like there's giant holes in them as he's now attacking other people. So it looks cool. Like there's a lot of like cool practical effects. I think the one place it falls apart a bit is the like final conclusion. Like they try to make it this like emotional thing between like a husband and a wife, and her escaping his abuse. And I think he just looks like shit. Like I think the Deadite at the end is more CG than they did in the rest of the movie, because the rest of it looks very practical. This guy is all burnt up and he looks like garbage. And I did not enjoy like the last 10 minutes of it, because it looked fake. Mm-hmm. And it was just very mean. But overall, if you like the new Evil Dead movies and you want to see some people get like brutalized on screen, this one will do it for you.
I'm not like an Evil Dead fan, and mm-hmm. I especially don't care about the old Sam Raimi ones. I think I probably mentioned this last month. Mm-hmm. But I do. I like the first one of these, like the current series. I like the first one quite a bit. Evil Dead Rise, I thought, was like okay at best.
Okay.
But I like what they're doing with it now, which is like Sam and Raimi and them, and I think Bruce Campbell are still like executive producers on these.
Yes.
But they're using it as like training grounds for new directors. It's always like these up and coming directors.
Fede Alvarez did one of them.
The next one is going to be made by the guy that made The Last Stop in Yuma County.
Okay.
Which is a movie I love. And so I'm like, I want to see what he'll do with it. And he's actually setting it in the 70s. So I'm excited for that one. I do want to see this one. I just didn't get around to it. I've been bad about making it to the movies lately.
I have A-List or whatever through AMC. So
I do too. I should be using it.
Oh yeah, you should. Like I have made my money back for the year already. So
I have for like 3 weeks in a row was trying to get my wife to go see The Invite with me, like that Seth Rogen movie.
Yep.
And fucked around until now it's not in theaters. There was always something. I gotta go get my nails done. You know, some fucking bullshit. And now here we are. I'm just gonna have to buy it when it comes out.
Yeah,
and that's basically true of all of these movies. Like, I want the Odyssey.
You want to go see them?
Evil Dead's gone.
Yeah, so that was why I was like looking. I was like, maybe I'll go see it this weekend. And the all last Spider-Man showing of it. Yeah, so I was like, I'll book it and go, and like there were no screenings past today or yesterday, so yeah. I went on Tuesday and got like one of the last showings they had in my theater. It's neat. Fede Alvarez did Evil Dead in 2013. It did take a decade before they did Evil Dead Rise, which was like thrown in. And he had that one. He had that Mummy movie, which I didn't see.
It's on HBO now. I've been meaning to watch it. I heard.
Oh, good. I didn't hear good things about it, which is
why. But it is. It is like according to him, it's an Evil Dead movie. He just for whatever reason it's called
the Mummy. Oh, the Mummy. Yeah, that's funny. Evil Dead Burn is this French dude, and and he said Evil Dead Wrath, which is coming in 2 years, is Francis Galluppi. So that's cool.
And breaking news on the Lee Cronin front, he is in talks to direct A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
Which I don't know how I feel about it. I'll let you know after I see The Mummy how I feel about that.
You didn't particularly like Rise a lot. I thought it was pretty
good. No. It's okay, but the 2013 one's better.
Yeah, sure. And like, because you don't like the original Evil Dead movies, the ones from the 80s and 90s, but like there's a lot in common with Evil Dead by Fede Alvarez. It's almost a remake of the original Evil Dead. It just doesn't have like the humor attached to it. It's more mean. And that we'll mostly call it there. I have seen some other stuff, but it's all garbage because it's Shark Week, and so I'm watching bad shark movies, and they're bad. I do have a couple that I'll be watching tomorrow and over the weekend, though, that have phenomenal names. One is called Sharks of the Corn. It's about sharks that haunt a cornfield.
I just don't get how you keep finding shark movies every year. There must be really a thing for this.
Tubi and Amazon Prime have like a ton of shark movies, and like they're new, like 2025, 2024, like stuff I haven't seen. They're all terrible, terrible movies, but they're amusing. The other one that I'm really excited to see, though, is called Water Park Shark, and the trailer is ridiculous. There's like sharks in the tubes in the slides. It's very stupid, and I'm looking forward to watching those. But yeah, I don't recommend them. They're very bad movies, but that's what I'm doing for Shark Week. But we're not talking about sharks anymore. We're talking about camp. And we have a pair of camp movies here. Sleepaway Camp from 1983 and They Them from 2022. We'll kick off with the older one. We'll kick off with Sleepaway Camp.
Dear Mom and Dad, I've been at a sleepaway camp for almost 3 weeks, and I'm getting very scared.
Welcome to sleepaway camp. Someone is watching you.
Hey, Mama, Reba!
Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death.
Turn it! Turn the wheel!
Oh my God!
Sleepaway camp. You won't be coming home.
I said 1983 came out. It was written and directed by Robert Hitzik. It released in theaters to a budget of somewhere around $300,000 to $350,000. Financials of that time sketchy at best, but box office of $11 million, which isn't bad. It's a decent pull for that. Comes like on the heels of Friday the 13th. In fact, Friday the 13th may have had a couple sequels by that point.
This is 83.
83. Yeah, so it might have had two at that point. So we're up to Friday 13th Part 3, which would be in 3D. But it is very much in that vein of film. It's a slasher, takes place at a camp, kids and counselors are getting offed. This film ended up having 4 sequels over the years, of which I've not seen any of them. I was hoping to get to Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3 sometime over the last month, but I did not get to them. So I don't know where this goes, but Sleepaway Camp from 1983 is kind of considered a cult classic, I think, at this point. And we'll get into some of the reasons why. Jeff, do you have any history with summer camp outside of like the Friday the 13th movie? So,
in real life?
Did you go to camp as a kid?
Yes.
Yeah.
For a week.
Exactly. Like, your parents would be like, all right, you're off to camp. And like, you'd pack up some shit and they'd send you away for a week. same with me. I always find these funny because this is not the camp experience that I had. We like had like cloth tents and like we didn't have like
this a was not
like we had that.
You didn't have a cabin?
No, we did not have a cabin.
No, there was a lot of this that brought me back, man.
Yeah, okay. So it's like I was like always wondering because like I mean I went to Boy Scout camp, so it was a little different. But yeah, we slept in like these army tents on a cot. And they also had what we called lean-tos, which were like basically like a wooden stage area. And that's where the leaders slept. Like they were in there. We did not have like an actual cabin, though, with a door and all that. And I don't know if the showers were separate, right? In this, the showers aren't in the cabins. I think at one point one of the girls gets killed.
They like say, "Oh, she went to go take a shower."
Yeah. So that was accurate to my experiences. Like we had to go to like the shower den or whatever, where the showers were. But yeah, my experience at camp was not like this. So interesting to hear that yours was more in line,
even down to like they have like the social or whatever, like. Like the dance that everyone goes to, like that. We did that, like we did that, like the last night of camp. So yeah, and like I'd say, like a lot of the charm of this movie is its early 80s-ness and the camp setting. Like it's just, it's a time capsule for sure. Some of these clothes, man, geez.
Yeah, lots of very short shorts.
And dudes wearing like crop tops and stuff. Like, what the hell?
But before we get to the camp there, this movie starts off with like it's a boat scene. Like they're out on a lake. It's a dad and his daughter and son, and they're on like a sailboat, and then there is a few teenagers on a motorboat pulling like a, I don't know if she's in a tube or
she's water skiing or something.
Yeah. Something like they're pulling her behind on a rope as one does and acting like kids, like just fucking around, and tragedy strikes. They crash into the sailboat capsizes and the kids accidentally run over this family. And it jumps like 10 years later. And it's revealed that it seems the girl survived. The boy did not. The dad did not. And her aunt, who is batshit bananas, and she's sending her son and her
She's been raising Angela since Angela. The accident. Yeah.
Yep. She's been raising her since then. She keeps calling her, oh, my like precious little girl. And she's telling Ricky, like, you better keep her safe while they're at camp. The aunt is very unsettling. I think it's a very good performance. It's just like she seems unhinged and does a great job there. They arrive on a bus to a camp. All the kids are kind of getting off, and here's kind of like the note I have is this. The staff is like overlooking all these kids getting out, and it's kind of wild because the head cook, I think his name is Artie, he's just like a super fucking creeper. And at one point he says something, I wrote this down, the Baldy line is brutally gross.
Like, yeah, we call them Baldies.
Yeah, he's like talking about the fact that like some of these girls have not hit puberty, and that's what he likes. So wow,
it shows you how much like attitudes have changed towards pedophilia.
Yeah,
like it's considered bad in this movie, but also like not bad enough that he wouldn't tell all his fucking coworkers that he wants to fuck these kids. It's just like, what the fuck, dude?
Yep. And like his coworkers are basically like, yeah, Artie's a creep, man. Like, but
they're
also
like, that's just a little too young or whatever. I was just like, okay, dude.
Yeah. So pretty early on, we learn that Angela, the girl from the boat, she very shy seemingly, and doesn't want to talk to anybody. She's also not eating while she's there, and she's kind of made enemies with like one of the counselors and one of the other people, and they're kind of like picking on her a bit. But there's like an older counselor who's in charge of, I guess, all the counselors. And he kind of like takes her under his wing and is like, all right, we're gonna get you some food. And but he drops her off to Artie and is like, hey, how about you like get Angela some ice cream or something, or like make her something she wants to eat. And he ushers her off into the walk-in closet, like the walk-in freezer, and just starts taking his fucking belt off. And like threatening her, like we're not like 20 minutes into this movie, and the movie is like just dropping pedo jokes and like attempted assault like immediately. But it doesn't take very long for Artie to get his comeuppance, because Ricky does come and save the day, and this is. This will be a point of note throughout the rest of the film, is like Ricky is always there to kind of take care of Angela. And he always seems to be around right at the time that like bad shit is happening. So Artie is the cook, and he is seasoning something. He has this huge fucking pot. Like it is like, I think you could fit a person in it. And he is on a ladder, kind of putting in seasoning and stuff. Yeah,
it's like, I don't know how.
So ridiculous.
I don't know how you would get the water to boil in that, because it's it's like a 6 foot pot. It's like 6 feet tall.
All right. So, and I don't know if they make pots that big, but every year here, I know that they make really big pots. Every year here for my birthday, we do what was called Crab Fest. And my mom's grandfather used to run a seafood restaurant up in Massachusetts. And so we have some of like the stuff from the old restaurant, like the big pots that they used to cook lobsters in,
like,
and stuff.
Be like big and round though, so it'd be closer to the heat, right?
Yeah.
Like,
they're tall. And it takes forever to boil the water.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Like it just It just takes forever. Like, you have to put it on like an hour ahead of time before you can even put anything in, because it just takes so long for water to boil and those things. This guy has a pot that is taller than he is because he has to climb a ladder to put seasoning in. And then we get like this first person kind of a, it's very reminiscent of 80s slashers, like where you're kind of seeing things from not necessarily the perspective of the killer, but like just about. And so you see like this hand come out and it pushes Artie, and he has to grab onto a ledge that's above the pot. It's like, he notices, he sees who it is. It's very clearly a kid, because like, hey, you were probably just messing around. How about you like help me down and I'll get you an ice cream or something. And the hand then kind of pulls a bit on the ladder. He stumbles, grabs onto the pot. And
for some reason,
over.
Grabs onto
it. He grabs onto it.
The one thing you don't want to touch.
Yep. And pulls it over onto himself. And it's pretty brutal. Like, this is pretty gross. Yeah, the burns. And they're, you watch them kind of blister up on him.
Yeah.
Because,
right?
The water pours over him and he looks pretty fucked up. But then, they keep shooting back to him as he's screaming. And, his skin is just boiling and blistering over. He never stops screaming the entire time he's being worked on, and they cart him away. I do think it's funny though, because all right, he has this water poured on him, and he's obviously very hurt, but he saw who did it. At some point, they're going to stabilize him, right? And be like, hey, what the fuck happened?
That's good. Very good point.
I thought that was kind of absurd. They cart him off and we never hear from Artie again. He's not dead. They put him in an ambulance and bring him to the hospital. The guy who owns the camp immediately goes and he's like, all right. He goes to the backup, the second in command in the kitchen. And he's like, yo, you're in charge now. All right. And how about we keep this quiet and I pay you an extra $50 a week. And then he goes to the other guys and he's like, yep. And y'all get $15 extra a week as long as you keep your mouth shut. It's like, what is going on here? This is a very, very sketchy. Things seem like maybe not on the up and up in this camp, but and camp continues on. They're playing camp games like volleyball and baseball. I think it's baseball, some sort of softball. They're playing like a slow pitch kind of softball type thing. They're going swimming. It's all normal camp shit, and there's a budding relationship between what the fuck is his name? Paul. This guy Paul and Angela, where Paul is kind of slowly drawing Angela out of her shell, and she'll talk to him, and they seem to kind of like each other. There's also this slut, I'm using that phrase, on purpose. She is throwing herself at basically all the jocks, and she used to date Ricky, Angela's cousin, and now she wants nothing to do with him because I guess she got boobs. That's a thing that they mentioned.
They kind of hooked up the year before at the camp, and now she's gone through puberty, and so now she's chasing older boys and stuff. There's also, dude, I guess I'm sure you'll get to it. There is a very, very odd sexual thing in this movie. I mean, there's lots of, but one of the camp counselors wants to fuck the creepy old guy that runs the place.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah.
That are never explained.
Yes. I I don't think I actually wrote that down, but yes, no, I do.
It's like my big takeaway from the movie. I'm like, what?
Why? So weird. There's so many weird things.
Like, she gets all excited and she's going, like, getting ready, like, you know, like, I'm going to get showered and dressed up and to go fuck this, like, gross old dude with a cigar in his mouth.
Yep. So the guy that just, like, bribed his kitchen staff to keep quiet about the accident that happened is a. One of the counselors who can't be more than like 20, 22 at tops, is pining for this dude. That person is Meg. She is also the counselor assigned to Angela's group. And Judy and Meg get along and they like kind of like team up to make Angela's life miserable. At the camp as things are kind of going on. Judy is an absolute psycho. Like, she is constantly like, one, why do you care what this like almost mute girl who is not, she's not like pulling the jocks away from you. Like, she's not like some bombshell that's there to like the jocks are like, oh man, like I'm not gonna pay attention to Judy because Angela's here. No, nobody wants anything to do with Angela because she seems like a fucking, she seems like a weirdo. Like, she seems like a complete psycho who doesn't talk to anybody except for her cousin and this guy Paul. So they're just like picking on her just to be an asshole, and Judy keeps getting more and more psychotic about it too. Like, oh, why does Angela get to sit on the bench and talk to boys when we have to play volleyball? Why doesn't Angela ever go swimming? Why doesn't Angela want to take a shower with us? Like, so they just keep like harassing this poor girl throughout the entire time. Angela kind of gets yelled at some point, and Meg and Judy and this other counselor, they get into a fight, and Angela's like, I'm going to see my cousin. So she's walking across camp, and as she's doing so, the jocks are on top of a building. They're on top of their cabin, horsing around, throwing water balloons at each other. And they see her walking along and they peg her with a water balloon. And one, Angela goes down like she's been shot by a cannon. Like, Ricky sees this. He's threatened to beat the shit out of them all. It's a very weird scene because it's like it's just a bunch of like asshole kids like acting like assholes, picking on the dork. Which is funny because Ricky is also doing the same thing in his cabin to like a kid on a consistent basis, like torturing this poor dude who he can't, Mozart. Guy's name is Mozart, and like just like hazing this kid at every moment with like a shaving cream and making him like pee himself and shit, like constantly torturing this poor kid. Yet Ricky doesn't see like that, like that's what they're doing to Angela too. It's just very weird. Anyway, these kids, they knock Angela down with the water balloon. Shit goes down, and one of the jocks, he's like, I gotta go take a massive dump. And he goes into the outhouse. He like high fives like one of his dudes, like, yeah, I'll be down to play baseball in a bit. I gotta take this shit. And he goes in to the stall. The next thing we see is like from the perspective of the perpetrator is a stick being put across the handles. So the door can't open from the inside. So if you like push on it, it won't open. And then the next thing we see is the screen above this stall being cut open. And then a beehive fucking gets dropped in there, or a wasp hive. where this fucker gets stung, the shit stung out of him. I'm not sure. Was he dead? I don't remember if he died or not. But
I mean, he was so covered, like his whole face is like covered.
Yeah, and that's the one thing with this film is like a lot of the kills or attacks are kind of are a little off screen.
Yeah,
you're never watching like the killer actually, the perpetrator actually commit the violence. It's like here's what's happening. You see enough, and then it like cuts, and then you see the aftermath of it, like with Artie and the boils and this fucking jock and the bee stings. Those special effects though that they do pretty good, because the bee kid also looked fucking gross.
Yeah. No, like what you're saying is exactly what I was gonna say about this movie. Like for the reputation this movie has as being, oh, it's so crazy. It's like, this is one of the tamest slashers.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, the kills are just not great. But then, and you're like, oh, well, maybe they didn't have the budget for effects. It's like, but they did.
Yeah.
Because they were, like, in the aftermath, you, like, again, like, when the dude gets burned, it looks pretty good. The bees, like, there's, like, these big open sores. Like, I don't know how realistic any of that is, but it's cool looking. So, like, it's just that the kills aren't that great, I don't think. Like, and there's just not a lot of them.
Shortly after that, the owner starts getting a little, like, hey, like, shit's going bad. It's all going to go downhill now. And he starts thinking Ricky is doing this. It's like, he's out to get me. He goes all very conspiratorial on this, like, 14-year-old kid. Like he's trying to get the place shut down. Like, what? Why would this 14-year-old be trying to shut you down? Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. He starts getting really like antsy with anything that's going on with Angela or Ricky, and kind of starts following him around. Then Meg causes some more, like, I think they end up throwing Angela into the water, where she has not wanted to go at all during this week at camp. And that kind of sets up like the ending portion of this, where Meg then sets up her date with the camp owner, as Jeff said, which is weird. Like, this dude is like, he has to be like 55, 60, and he's a gross looking dude. Like, he's foul looking, and Meg is cute. Like, she's a, you know, she's a cute looking counselor.
She's like in her 20s.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Why does she want to like get with this dude?
I and they don't even like try to explain it. It's just like, she gets all fucking excited about it.
Yeah. So she's going to like get ready for this date, and she's taking a shower, and this is where like the first time we actually see, I think, blood actually drawn, or like a traditional slasher kill, because she's killed with a knife. She's stabbed through the back and just kind of slit open from the ass all the way up to like the back of her neck. It's again, you don't see a lot of it. You see her kind of like in pain as the knife like enters into her, but you don't actually see the actual violence taking place, just a lot of blood in the aftermath. And then well, I guess before that, Judy had talked Paul into like going on a hike with her somewhere, and she ends up kissing him in sight of Angela, which makes Angela upset and sad, and she runs away feeling all dejected. And then Paul's been trying to like get back with her the rest of this whole time and trying to apologize and blah blah blah. So Angela invites him out to the lake at night, and he's like, yeah, like, but he goes out there to he thinks he's going to get lucky, and she slits his throat, chops his fucking head off. And that's kind of it. Like they oh, all this shit's gone bad. The counselors have like they kind of wrapped everything up. They all right, we know who's what, and they end up seeing Angela out on the beach, singing to herself. And she's holding Paul. It looks like Paul's like resting in her lap. And they're like, "Oh, Angela, are you all right?" And she stands up. And this is probably the like most iconic thing from Easily. The movie. Is like she's naked and she's covered in blood. And when she turns around. It's revealed that Angela is actually Peter, the little boy from the beginning of the movie. And then we get a flashback of like how the aunt always wanted a daughter and basically forced transitioned Peter into Angela. And that's the big secret. And it made Peter or Angela crazy and homicidal. And that's how the film ends.
Yeah, and besides this, like the thing that it's like a shocking twist and all that, it's just like it is kind of a fairly disturbing like final shot of her like screaming and holding the head, and
she looks feral.
Iconic. Yeah,
yeah, like I think it's like that is the thing. Like if
it's kind of a whole movie,
yeah.
Like this movie's a classic. Like
if you know anything about Sleepaway Camp, it's probably like this ending shot is that she was the killer. It's a good all ending shot. And she's not Angela, she's actually a boy who has been abused her whole life. And yeah, it's a very good ending shot to end on. Like it's a horrific looking image, and I don't know. When I saw this a few years ago, which was the first time I had watched it, I didn't love it then. I don't think I love it now either, but I've grown to appreciate it more. And I think there's definitely something about it that there's like a little more meat on it than like, say, Halloween or any of the Friday the 13th movies. So what do you have to say about it, Jeff?
Very similar, and I am like, I saw this as a kid, didn't like it as much as Friday the 13th or Halloween or any of that. And so never really developed an attachment to this franchise like you have not seen the sequels, and like you, I meant to watch them and did not. So like pretty similar, I guess, you know, you just saw it for the first time more recently.
Yeah.
But there's something. These early 80s slashers that I didn't like when I was a kid have grown on me now. And one example of that is Silent Night, Deadly Night. Because like movies like Silent Night, Deadly Night or Sleepaway Camp, they are trying to do more of a movie than the big slashers were. Like once the big slashers got going, like Friday and Halloween, like especially their sequels, there's not really much of a story going on.
No.
And here there's like a story, there's characters, there's, it's not the best made movie or anything, but like, you know, they're trying to tell a story about something that happens, like, which is like not what I would really say about like Friday 13th Part 3, which came out the same year. It's like literally like, oh, we're just doing this again, and Jason's out here killing people. Like, there's like a like you know, with Silent Night and this, there's like a reason why the killer's doing what they're doing. Here, there's a little bit of a mystery, although again, I don't know why, like. Like, my wife the whole way was like, it's the girl, right? It's the girl, right? I'm just like, I'm like, yeah, you'll see. You'll see. I mean, it's like, her. She's not a girl, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the twist, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's pretty easy to tell it's It's Angela. Like, they, the film tries.
The only misdirected is Ricky, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh, it has to be Ricky because he's always putting up for Angela. And it's like, nah, man, it's all pretty telegraphed that it's Angela.
Yeah.
the one kill I guess I missed in talking about it was there's this late night boat like canoe ride.
Oh, and yeah.
I think it's like the first actual kill. This is right after Artie is like this asshole and one of the girls are in the canoe and he tips the canoe over and she's pissed off and it kind of like swims away. But then somebody else shows up under the canoe and drowns him and he knows who it is. Like it's very much. It's kind of telegraphed that like this is a girl. Like, so any of the other kills where it's like, oh, maybe Ricky did it because of Angela. No, it's like this kid pretty much like lays it out that it's Angela. Like he talks about how she, you know, why, you know, she doesn't want to talk and that the other guys probably they want to see her out here. So like if it was Ricky, the comments that he makes wouldn't be that. I don't think that the misdirection for Ricky is very well done. It's never really like, yeah, Ricky's the bad guy here. So what did your wife think of the reveal at the end?
He was just like, that's like she does not offer her opinion on stuff unless you like, pull it out of her. But she was just like, she did turn to me after the end and she was like, that's like the ending is they reveal that she's a boy. I was like, you have to understand it was a big deal at the time. Like,
yeah. yeah.
She was strangely like locked into the movie in a way. Like, this is the type of movie that they would show on Joe Bob, and she zones the fuck out. And she was, like, locked into this. Like
This one, she, so it caught her a little bit. It's interesting, because...
Maybe if she watched Joe Bob closer, she would have noticed that his mangled dick expert that he had on all time was this girl. He had Felissa Rose on all the time on that show as the mangled dick expert.
That's amazing.
She's also, did you look at her film credits? She's been in like 160 films.
I did not.
She was in a scary movie this summer.
Oh, neat. So she's still out there working at.
Yeah, mostly, you know, because she's some
years old.
Cashing in on her, you know, her fame from this movie. Doing a lot of horror, like, you know, small, you know, low budget horror shit.
Yeah, so she played Angela in this. I don't think she's brought back for...
No, her character is, I guess.
Yeah, so I looked up what, like, the other sleepaway camps are, and yeah, she, like, that Angela is the, like, kind of main character for the other sleepaway camp movies. In two Unhappy Campers and three Teenage Wasteland and also in four. And she specifically makes appearance in the remake or not remake, I guess like the reboot of it in 2008 called Return to Sleepaway Camp. Angela does show up in that.
She's in Terrifier.
Also, was she?
Terrifier 2.
Huh.
You know what's so funny? When you see her on like Joe Bob, she's such a like outgoing and fun personality. Mm-hmm. And like in this movie, I mean, I'm sure this is like her first role or whatever.
It was.
But yeah. Like they just have her staring forward all the time. And she's clearly like again, if you see her on Joe Bob, you're like, this lady's all personality. And like they didn't, again, she was a kid at this time, so who knows? But they didn't really use any of that.
Yeah. And I think she does a really good job in this movie, like as her first role too, as being this like very awkward kid. Like she feels awkward in it. And
That's what I'm saying. Is like she's not like that in real life at all.
Yeah,
she's actually very pretty now too. Like,
yeah. Looking at her Wikipedia, like I don't know when this picture was from. 3 years ago, so she was 54 at the time of this photo.
Yeah, she's like very pretty for her age. Yeah,
yeah, almost 60, but very good looking. Cool. Jeff, what's your rating?
Look, it's again never been my favorite. I accept it as a classic. I do think the final shot is cool as hell. I think it's some of the sexual themes in it are kind of like interesting, if not crazy. But this has grown on me for its charms, which to me is like just that early 80s camp vibe and
yep.
the bad clothes and the pranks that they pull on each other, like the, you know, the shaving cream prank. Me and my friends were doing that to each other when we were kids. Like, so.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of that, I kind of dig it. It's just what holds it back for me is that the kills suck. So it's like a 6 for me.
That is exactly where I'm at for exactly the same reasons. But I am coming around more on it. Like, watching it this time. I found it more entertaining this time around than the first time.
Me too. And I do wonder though if the sequels amp up the gore.
Yeah, I'm interested in watching them. It seems that the fourth one is just not available anywhere. Which I mean, who knows if I make it through 2 and 3? Like, if I were ever to get to 4, 2 and 3 are available on Tubi, as is Return to Sleepaway Camp. So if anybody wants to catch those for free, they are out there. I may give them a go.
Yeah, I might too.
Just for the fun of it. Okay, so our next film is from 2022, called They Them.
It's a great day to be alive, isn't it?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm guessing that some of you, you're not happy. Maybe you don't fit in. People make fun of you. Well, I can't make you straight, but you give us this week, and we might be able to help. Boys' cabin over there, girls' cabin over there.
I use they, them pronouns, as in they can't believe they're at this camp.
I have zero interest in not being gay.
There's no judgments in this room.
Sometimes Oisha was invisible.
I would understand it a lot more if there was Bible thumping and queer bashing.
Do you even believe in any of this? Come in, please.
Do you think your parents are disappointed in you?
Sometimes.
So what do? You try to make yourself special. You become they.
Today, we're going to be exploring traditional gender roles.
Look how long they've been doing this.
It's time to play.
This could get a lot worse.
Where's my killer?
We need to get out of here.
Taste?
Just enjoy the sunshine and work on your tan.
They/Them. Streaming only on Peacock, August 5th.
It is directed by John Logan in his feature directorial debut. John Logan is, he has been a writer on a bunch of stuff over the years. He's worked on Any Given Sunday, Gladiator, some Star Trek stuff. He's worked with Martin Scorsese multiple times. He's been a writer for, he wrote Any Given Sunday for Oliver Stone, but for The Aviator, he wrote for Martin Scorsese.
I was going to bring this up.
He also wrote for Hugo with Martin Scorsese. He's written for Gore Verbinski, Tim Burton. Like, this guy has worked with, at least produced scripts for some great directors.
Yeah. I think this is his only directorial, but like, dude, he did Gladiator. Yes. He wrote the script for Gladiator. Like,
yeah.
Just
looking at the names, like, it's like, holy shit, like,
Skyfall. Mike, he did the Michael movie that made $1 billion this year.
Oh yeah, I just saw that here. my son says I will not like that. So
I know I won't like it, but yeah.
So John Logan. Writing and his directorial debut here. It was produced by Blumhouse, released in August 2022, direct to streaming to Peacock. So it's a Peacock original, and I think like the big thing here is that it has Kevin Bacon in it as he's the most prominent one on the poster, and also Anna Chlumsky, who people probably know from My Girl. I'm sure she's been in other stuff, but
we're revealing our age here. That's what I know her from. It was one of my first crushes. Most people probably know her from Veep on HBO.
Oh, right. She plays one of the assistants. Yes, I do remember her in Veep. I was like, where the hell else have I seen her in? Like, she's been around. She is in it as well. And what this film is, so it's not a summer camp in the traditional sense. It is a conversion camp. And Kevin Bacon's character Owen Whistler, he runs this camp called the Whistler Camp. And it is a conversion camp for LGBTQ youth.
Gay conversion therapy or whatever.
Yeah, which is illegal in a lot of places, although some states are trying to bring it back because, of course, they are. If you know any history of anything about conversion camps, they're pretty brutal places for these kids to go. Generally religious, and they're there to kind of like suppress and re-indoctrinate them to basically get themselves back in the closet. This movie starts off with a car driving down a road at night, and tire pops. Lady gets out of it, and she's like, has no cell signal because they're in the middle of the woods, and she gets back in, and an axe hits her, and she's dead. Now, I don't know if this is addressed. My guess is that person was the old nurse.
Yeah, it is not addressed, but I filled in the blanks like doing my own lore in my head, and that's okay. Again, it's not implied at all or explained at all. This person is, but I'm like, oh, she was probably right.
Because then, like, immediately after that, the kids arrive at camp, and they are introduced to the staff, which is a very small staff. It's Owen, Kevin Bacon's character, his wife, who is a psychologist. There's like a groundskeeper guy, and another husband and wife, or husband and fiance, I'm not really sure. They're there, and then Anna Klumsky is a nurse, and she is introduced as the new nurse. That's the only thing that was like, is was that the nurse?
And, yeah, was the old nurse who got killed? Yeah,
yeah. So she's kind of like introduced that. Seems like this place is going to be like a nice, maybe not a nice place to go, but like
it's he like Kevin Bacon greets them all and he gives like this kind of like really good sales pitch about he's like, if you're gay, you're gay. We're not here to judge you. You know what I mean? Like this whole like we're not here trying to make you do anything. We just want this to be a nice place for you. We're trying to help you out. I try to help you be who you are. Like, you know what I mean? Like I was just like, oh, this is like, I mean, I know because this is a horror movie. It's not going to be the case, but I'm like, this would be the gentle version of whatever this insane idea of converting people to being straight.
Yeah. And,
but even saying yeah, if you're not straight, that's okay. Like, and you know, you don't have to become like, he says, I can't make you straight. It's like, okay. Yes. Like, he just does a 180 immediately after that, but
doesn't take long.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, this doesn't seem like it's going to be an awful place. The kids don't necessarily trust them right up front because, like, of course they don't. Their parents have sent them here, or other family members have sent them here, and it's a conversion camp. Like the whole purpose is to convert them from being gay. To getting back in the closet, pretending they're not gay. Owen sends the boys off to the boys' cabin and the girls off to the girl cabin. And this other person, Jordan, is just kind of still standing there. Owen turns around and, like, all right, what's up, Jordan? And they kind of lay out that, they're non-binary and trans, and they go by they/them pronouns. So there's your title in the first like 7 minutes of the movie. And Jordan is, they are maybe they're the main character. I feel if anybody is going to be the main character, they're kind of it. We do get glimpses of a lot of the other campers throughout, but it all kind of like cycles back to Jordan over time, as they are kind of the one that gets the most focus. After they all kind of like settle into camp, they then have, this is a pretty stereotypical round table therapy session where everybody shares something about themselves. And all the campers kind of like lay out why they're there. Some of them lying a little bit, some laying it all out. And again, Jordan doesn't really share a ton. And it's kind of coaxed out of them by the end. Let's see. Then it gets bad. So like that all seemed pretty, like the day one is pretty tame. Like the round table was, I didn't find anything about it like, oh, this is creepy and weird. They do pressure Jordan into speaking, but it's more like, hey, everybody needs to talk. Day two is when shit starts going kind of like weirdly south. I think right away at the end of day one, one of the girls sneaks off to take a shower. And it's like late at night in the shower. And then we get this. It's very much a stereotypical slasher kind of scene where it's like you're pulling up on the door and we're expecting this person to be killed. And it's not. They open the door, and I believe it's the camp doctor, like the psychologist that's married to Owen, is standing there, and this person, Alexandra, turns around. And then next we see Alexandra moving into the boys' dorm because Alexandra is trans, and but trans as a trans woman, and still hasn't fully transitioned, so has all dude's genitalia. So they thrust Alexandra into the boys' dorm, the boys' cabin. And from there, things start getting kind of like worse. This guy Zane wakes everybody up and handcuffs them, takes them out into the woods. It's fucking weird.
Yeah.
So like things like
survive till morning, like go walk for 10 minutes and then survive till morning.
Yeah. It's like weird, right? Like it's like,
I don't know what the
handcuffs are like.
Well, I just don't know what, yeah. What are we trying to accomplish with this? I don't know.
Yeah, so the activities start becoming more and more mean. Next, we see they're doing one-on-ones with the camp therapist. And Dr. Whistler is just straight up, like, ripping into them. Like,
doesn't she tell Jordan that she's a dyke? Or yep. Something to that effect? Like, forgot yep, what she said, some sort of homophobic slur, but like saying that she's a girl,
yep.
Which is weird considering they want to straighten these kids out, and I'm pretty sure Jordan is like biologically a boy. That part stuck out to me. I was like, he was even turning to my wife. I'm like, did she call her a fucking dyke? Like, what the fuck? Like, but not like in any sort of way that could be constructive or anything. It was just like, just to be mean to her.
Yeah. So before Jordan goes in, like one of the other campers comes out crying, and like, so things are starting to sour very quickly in this camp. There's a fun little scene here where Jordan is back in the cabin and kind of like sad, but that for whatever reason they then have like a dance party and sing along to Perfect by Pink. It's a cute little scene. Like it's nothing like amazingly special, but it's cute. Like
there is like maybe another music montage in this. I remember that one. I don't know. I was just like, this is a little like, I don't know. Okay.
It's a little much, like, yeah, but, sure, yeah. But also, I mean, it's very stereotypical gay. Like we're going to do this Pink song, and Pink very much loved by the LGBT community for being very inclusive and speaking on those issues. And so, but it's cute. Like it's kids having fun. Like, oh, we're good enough as we are. Like it's like has a nice little message to it. Jordan then kind of like sneaks into the office late at night. I'm not sure why. Like, it's not really kind of like thought out, but Jordan sneaks in and discovers like the history of the Whistler camp, where there's lots of photos of past campers being tortured and beaten. And Molly, the nurse, catches him. And that's when, he's like, hey, you need to help us. You need to help keep us safe. The weird groundskeeper is watching the girls take showers, and he's offed. So there's your second kill.
Echoes of Sleepaway Camp there.
Yeah. then things get even more weird. The boys and girls are split. The boys are taken to the shooting range and the girls are taken to the kitchen. The boys are going to have a shooting competition while the girls make pies for them. Just like, as we're going to explore traditional gender roles is what one of the counselors says. There's just kind of like this little shooting competition where Jordan is revealed to be like an expert marks person. And Owen, the other counselor, is a little pissed at this. Not Owen. Owen's the guy who owns the camp. The Zane is a little pissed that he loses to Jordan. But then Owen calls on... He does this weird speech where he's like, we're men, we're hunters. Like, it's our natural state of being or something along those lines. And then singles one of them out. Maybe the gayest of all of like the kids there, singles this kid Toby out to shoot the dog. It's like, you need to kill the dog, because the dog has cancer and you need to kill something for whatever reason. And then it's like, if you don't shoot the dog, Zane there is going to start beating the dog with a sledgehammer. It's like, what the fuck are we watching? Like, this is gone.
Yeah.
Like, this has gone really dark really quickly. Understandably so, because it's a dark place to be.
Like, but... I want to break the fucking dog's legs with the fucking sledgehammer.
Whew. Jordan kills the dog.
I love this scene, though. One, it's good. You know, putting a dog in peril is like triggering.
Yep.
But I appreciate that we went there and then he did it. Or she did it, whatever. They did it. But I love Jordan being exposed as like a marksman. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, where it's like, yeah, I could do this like tough guy shit. Like, I've apparently he has some sort of history with guns and is like awesome at him. I was just like, that's a cool character. Like, you know, like you added to this character, like they know hunting. You know, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought that all worked really well. On the other side of that, in the pie making, they make their pies, and then one of the lady counselor, she dismisses everybody except for like the cute blonde. And then like basically assaults her. She does get out of there before anything happens, but like it starts getting really weird. We then get this kind of the jock gay guy and this other person, Gabriel. They hook up and actually have sex in the cabin, and it's revealed that Gabriel actually works for Owen. He works for the camp, and they take this kid, Stu, strap him down to a chair, and connect him to like electrodes. And start giving him aversion therapy, where it's like, all right, like here's a picture of a woman, and now here's a sexy picture of a man, and we're gonna shock you while that's up there. So, like, very Clockwork Orange. It is an actual, I don't want to call it a therapy, but it is an actual thing that they used to do back in like the 50s and 60s, to avert people from different proclivities, whether it be gay or not. It's a pretty dark scene there. They bring Stu to the infirmary where Molly's like, what the fuck is going on here? The nurse. And they're like, well, you're going to take care of him. She's like, no, I'm going to go to the police. And that's where Owen kind of like lays it down that like, man, they're not going to do shit around here. Like, I'm in charge. So it gets really, really dark at that point. And then the slasher portion kicks in. So this has been like kind of like this really dark camp. Like, it's a horror film in every sense of the word up until this point. But it's more like a real world horror film. So like, it's like these people being abusive to these kids, who are, they just want to be themselves, and they're being kind of like really attacked and abused by these adults at this camp, which is what you expected of a conversion camp, but it's not yeah. how they presented themselves at the beginning. And this is where I think the problem with the film is like the slasher stuff is just kind of tacked on.
It's like always lurking on the periphery throughout. Like, again, yeah. at the beginning of the movie, you get a kill, yeah. right?
Yes.
But
then,
like,
then the groundskeeper gets killed.
It works enough as like a horrific conversion yeah. camp thing, like where Kevin Bacon's the bad guy.
Yep.
And that's it. Like that, it works as that. Now, I'll say why I think the slasher element ultimately does work in the end, but like the whole time I'm watching the movie, I'm like, this is enough. Like, I don't need the mystery killer. And I actually thought like the killer was like Kevin Bacon for some of it, where it was just like he's just dressing okay. up. Like, I don't know what you thought, but I was also just like, this element is so not necessary because the movie's already like, it's engaging enough, and like there is the horror element already. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like,
yeah,
you're already a horror element on top of it.
Yeah, it's like, and then you're tacking this, you're tacking the slasher genre into something that's already horrific. I did not think Kevin Bacon. It's an interesting theory that like that you kind of thought that at least early on. I didn't really know who it was up until. So Jordan is, he's in the office. He looks over, and this is after Owen tells his wife Cora to go get the guns, and like one for you, one for me, and also we're not giving guns to these kids because they'll kill us, which is very self-aware. When the killer comes in that point, so like kind of like confronts Kevin Bacon before the killer takes the mask off, I was like, it's the nurse.
So 10 minutes before it's revealed, at some point it's clear it's not any of them, like it's not the people running the place. I was like, oh, it's obviously, like I said to my wife, I was like, it's going to be someone that like went there and was abused by them and yes. is going to come back and get them. But I just figured it would be a person who's not a character at all in the movie. And then I know it turns out it's Anna Schlumpsky.
And if we circle back to that first kill, which is why it's like, it's never addressed, but it's like,
yeah,
that was the actual nurse. Right. And then Molly, she's the replacement nurse, but she's actually a different person from Owen's past who has been to this camp and was abused, and she's come back for revenge, and she snuck in. And that's what they lay out. She was this person, Angie, who Kevin Bacon does not remember, which is even more sad, I think, because like she's like, yeah, like I'm back, and it's like, I don't really remember you. Like, not really.
He's tortured so many people.
And then she I guess like she attacks him, but he is able to kind of like get the knife from her. And Jordan, though, picks up the gun, kind of tells them to stop. They get separated, and Owen, like, it's like, you're not gonna shoot me. Like, shooting a dog is one thing, but shooting me is. And I think this was a good scene here where Jordan kind of's like, yeah, I have the strength to not do it, which is why I'm gonna walk away. And he puts the gun down, and then Molly or Angie or whatever the fuck you want to call her, she runs at him and stabs him and pushes him against. There was something else there. Was it like a something else he ends up on? I don't know if it was like a deer horn or something. Like, but he gets impaled on something else besides her knife. And that's it. And well, it's not really it, because then the police do show up and they arrest Angie, and they kind of like take the kid. It's funny because the kids are just like, all right, well, we're gonna leave now. And it's like, wouldn't they call your parents? Like, like some of yous are definitely underage, some of yous aren't, but some of you are underage. Like, wouldn't they get you? I don't know. I really enjoy the actual horrific camp portion of it. I thought,
yeah,
like that was the true horror here. I kind of felt the slasher stuff was tacked on, but where were you on they them?
All right, so I want to set the stage here. Mm-hmm. I was interested in seeing this movie when it came out. And here's why. It's because I like Kevin Bacon as an actor quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I thought he's really good in this.
Yeah, he is.
But I didn't see it because it got across the board shit reviews. So let me give you some numbers here. On Letterboxd, it has a rating of 1.6, which is That's really bad.
Crazy.
On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a critic score of 32%. It has an audience score of 25%.
Wow.
So with that stage set, I have to say, like, I actually really liked the movie. Like, I was dreading it going in, knowing these numbers. And I ended, like, this is one of those weird ones, you know, where, like, they didn't get, but I got, or it sometimes happens the other way, too, where, like, everyone likes a movie and I don't get
it. Yeah, yeah.
I thought this movie was not great. I thought it was good. Like, I was was into the story. I think the premise is a really cool one. And it's clearly written from the heart by the director. I dug it. Like, I'd say the only thing I would throw against it, yeah, the slasher element feels tacked on, but I think it earns it at the end by having it be a character who's wronged by them, and also that she was throughout the whole movie, you know, when you're like, it was like staring you in the face and somehow I didn't see it.
Yes.
And I was like, I was okay with it. Also, having the slasher element, I don't think there was really any good kills once again.
No.
So there's that. Is it like a 4 or 5 star movie for me? No. But I liked it quite a bit. Like, I think it's like definitely worth checking out if you're a horror fan. Again, some of the stuff, like when they force the trans girl to go back with the boys, like chilling. Where he's just like, you know, Jordan was honest with us yesterday. You weren't. Not, like, all of a sudden you're like, he's like super evil. I was like, God damn. Or any of that shit. Any of the shit that they're doing to them.
Oh, it just keeps getting more. It's like snowballing, like in the darkness, like because it's like
they're slowly revealing how much they're not what he said at the beginning.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page right now. Richard Roper gave the film 3 out of 4 stars. One of the more positive reviews, and I think he gets it here though, because he's like, what the quote here is, time and again we're reminded the real monster in they them is bigotry and intolerance. And like, that's it. Like,
well, what's interesting, if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes, like if you go on the Rotten Tomatoes page for it and you look at the, you know, the critics' blurbs, one of the negative ones was like, this thing doesn't want to take a side. And I was like,
no, what? It does. It very much does. It's like, this is bad.
Yeah. It was like, oh, like it kind of says it was ultimately good for them in the end. And I was like, what? I don't know. Like, I thought it was pretty clear
for them.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty clear that, yeah, none of this is good. And that, you know, yeah, that was literally one of the top critic reviews was like, this thing is afraid to take a side and it has nothing to say. And I was like, I don't agree with that at all. Like, I thought it was pretty clearly written by someone who's gay who wanted to make, they wanted to make a slasher movie that was about their peers growing up, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think it's a cool premise. Like, again, I was like genuinely like surprised by how much I like this. Do I think it's amazing? No, but I think it's worth checking out. I just, my only reservation in telling people to check it out is that apparently nobody else likes it. I did. I'm getting it the same score as Sleepaway Camp, as a 6 out of 10. But I think in many ways this is a much more watchable modern movie. So yeah, that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, so I'm weirdly the exact same place you are score wise. So we're kind of deadlocked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking like as a slasher, it's like neither of these are particularly great slasher movies. Like,
yeah.
I think the kills are bad. They're mostly off screen. In fact, even more so in this one than in Sleepaway Camp. Because like there are kills in this that like the doctor, the therapist, she just ends up dead in a closet. Like, yeah, she's just completely killed off screen.
It's just, this does have disturbing scenes that are not kills though. Like, so like it kind of makes up for it.
Yeah. And yeah, this, because the actual horror isn't necessarily the wronged former camper that was there, it's all the shit that Owen and his staff are doing to these kids, and like the subterfuge and the lying to them, and the like trying to engage with them and be like, oh, we're a safe space, but then turning around and being like the least safe space on the planet for these kids. It's crazy to me that there are people that are like, it doesn't have anything to say, or it doesn't want to take a stand.
Go look through the Rotten Tomatoes. You'll see one critic say that. Like, it has no courage. It's you know, this. Yeah.
Absolutely insane. Like, I think it has a lot of courage in what it does say. And I would think the I could see somebody being like, nah, it's a bad slasher and I don't like it. I could see them doing that like that. Other than that, like, it's a horror movie, and everything that happens in it is pretty fucking horrific. Like,
and I think
the cheesy like sing along song.
Yeah, yeah. I think you have stuff like Kevin Bacon is just a great actor, and you have, I thought, pretty well drawn characters. Like, I thought Jordan was a good protagonist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I again, as Jeff said, look, everybody else seemed to hate this. We're not saying it's great, but I think it's definitely worth a watch, especially if you're looking for camp-related films. I think these two are, they're both good camp-related films. Summer vibes here.
Yeah.
One way darker than the other. Both I think have they're worth watching for sure. So I don't think there's a definitive winner here.
I would give it to Big Them for me. Like,
I think it's a better movie overall.
I think
yes.
And it's also just that, like, if you're gonna watch,
Like, I want to, like, boost it a little bit, because I don't think it's as bad as people say. If you want to watch, like, a summer camp movie, maybe don't watch Sleepaway Camp for the 800th time. Maybe give this one that nobody gave a chance a shot, so.
Yeah. Agreed. So, we'll go with Jeff on this one. They, Them is going to come out as our winner, which will bring us to next month, Jeff.
Okay.
What are we watching?
All right, so there's a movie coming out in early September that I'm really excited for. So if you would indulge me in going to the theater, let's do this.
Sure. All right.
So September 4th, like, so our episode for September, but you guys are used to that. Adam Wingard has a new film coming out called Onslaught. That is the movie I want to go see. And I believe it is a secret sequel to The Guest. So we're going to make the other movie, Adam Wingard's The Guest.
All right.
Which, you know, I think you've seen. And
I have seen.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah, it's like a secret tribute remake of the Terminator.
Yeah, yeah. I love The Guest so much. And everything about Onslaught says to me, I don't know if you've seen the new trailer for it. It looks awesome. But it looks more like a slasher action movie than The Guest was. Mm-hmm. With like kind of like an iconic slasher villain looking dude. But there's just something, like, do you remember remember Anna Wingard made the 2016 Blair Witch?
Yeah.
But well before that came out, they had a teaser trailer for it, and it was called The Woods. And so, like, nobody knew it was a sequel, or, like, I think it was a sequel to Blair Witch, not a reboot. Nobody knew it was a sequel to Blair Witch until, like, right before it came out, then they changed the title. I don't think they're going to change the title on this one. I think this will stand alone as something you could watch having not seen The Guest. But I fully believe it is in The Guest universe, and it is
a sequel to The Guest. Yeah. So, Adam Wingard has confirmed that on
he's confirmed?
Yes, he's confirmed.
This is news to me. I just sussed it out from, like, what the premise is and who's in it.
Yeah, so this is from the Wikipedia page. So in July of 2026, Adam Wingard confirmed that Onslaught takes place within the same continuity as The Guest.
Yeah, fuck, dude. So, I'm so excited.
So maybe not a direct sequel, but I definitely takes place in that universe.
My belief is that it's like a sequel, but it's like a standalone. Like, you could watch it and not have to by know itself. Any, you know what yeah. I mean? Yeah. I did not know that it was confirmed. I just, like, it literally, like, the premise when it was first announced was, this is about super soldiers and it has Dan Cedars in it. I was like, that's The Guest. So
also weird here, though, I do like this movie that he's talking about, but he also considers Your Next to be a part of the same continuity. So I don't know what any of this means.
But... Yeah, I don't know what any of Your Next has to do with The Guest, but that's... I'm happy to see him back on this path, though, because he was doing those blockbuster movies for a while that I felt he seemed ill-suited for.
Onslaught takes place in the same town and same universe as The Guest.
Oh my god. I was literally just going, like, seriously, I was like, just guess, like, I thought I was being smart and, like, figuring this out, but I guess it's out there. Oh fuck yeah, dude. You know how much I love The Guest.
I mean, to be fair, this article on Bloody Disgusting was only posted 6 days ago, so you had mentioned this to me, like,
when it first got announced, I was like, is this the Guest? Yeah. You know how much I love The Guest. Like, it's one of my favorite fucking movies of the last 20 years. Just because Dan Stevens is so fun in it. But yeah, we're going to do The Guest, and it's sort of semi-sequel, which comes out in early September.
All right. Well, so we will be a little late, but we'll be back with The Guest and Onslaught in early September.
I'm excited.